Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast. Why, yes, I don't have a voice left. It turns out that catching a little bit of a cold in Nashville and then still doing a ton of shows is not great for the pipes. But that's okay. I still have 4 shows in Chicago, 2 tonight in downtown Chicago, today being Friday the 14th, and then tomorrow in Rosemont on the 15th of December. And then January, by the way, I love the squeaky parts. It makes me sound adorable. When I have this voice, then I start singing Kim Carnes songs like, "She's got Betty Davis eyes." No, this would be perfect for Tom Waits. "Oh, you gotta hold on. You gotta hold on." It's perfect. When I get a cold is when I start doing Tom Waits karaoke. But I'll be in January at the Comedy Attic in Bloomington, Indiana on the 17th, 18th, and 19th. And just look for Comedy Attic in Bloomington. If you live in Bloomington, you probably can figure out how to find their ticketing site. But come out to those shows. Those will be really fun. I would like to thank Carbonite for sponsoring this episode of the Nerdist Podcast. Back your shit up. Wow, I just hate myself so much for saying it that way. Yes, Chloe. Oh, you're just dancing. She's backing that ass up with Carbonite. But seriously, you will lose your stuff at some point. Your hardware will fail. So Carbonite keeps all of your stuff securely online. Then you can access your stuff from any computer. You just need an account. It's super simple. Plans start at just $59 a year. Believe me, you don't want to lose your data. You can lose any hardware piece of anything and replace it, but you cannot replace your information and your files. So please don't do what I have done in the past. Not recently, but in the past when I was younger. So go to Carbonite.com, use the offer code Nerdist, and get 2 bonus months when you purchase. So there you go, Carbonite.com, offer code Nerdist. This episode is Mr. John Hodgman, whom I adore. Jesus Christ, Chris, how come you say everyone's really awesome all the time? Because I meet a lot of awesome people, internet. And John Hodgman is one of those people. He helped me out with the Comedy Central pilot. He's someone that I love talking to whenever I get a chance to hang out with him. I always feel like, why the fuck don't I hang out with this guy more? He's so fucking funny and articulate and lovely, and you should check out all things John Hodgman whenever you can. And this was a fun sit-down chat that we did in the dressing room before we worked on the pilot. So here we go, there's podcast number 296 with the lovely tastic John Hodgman. Sir John Hodgman, I've just knighted him. It's a weird backdoor into the royal court. I don't even know their fucking terminology. Sir John Hodgman.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Katie, by the way. Katie, produces almost all of our podcasts. I don't know how she does it.
I don't know how you do it, Katie.
How do you do it?
I don't sleep.
Something to do with these.
Me neither.
Buttons and knobs. Yeah, I know. You don't.
Switches, lights, and knobs.
You don't sleep, do you, Chris?
No, I don't. I have one of those inversion tables, and I hang upside down like a bat. And then I don't let anyone get too close to me. I'll wide open the entire night.
Yeah.
I wake sleep.
So is that a thing, or is that a thing you just made up?
Doesn't that sound like a thing that
at
the learning annex?
Yeah.
Like, do you realize you waste 8 hours a day sleeping? Now with wake sleeping.
Learn to wake sleep simply by hanging upside down.
That's it. Because if you can get the blood to pool in your brain, keeps you wide awake.
Not that you need any tips on entrepreneurialism. But if you wanted to make another $10 million, you would release a series of video cassettes on the subject of wake
sleeping. Cassettes.
Oh, yeah.
And audio cassettes.
Well, that's what, you know, all the hipsters are using VHS now.
That's right, because the quality is really good.
The quality, you can't get the warmth.
Nope.
From a DVD that you can get the warmth of a 25-year-old video cassette of Goonies.
I'm tired of looking at things crystal clear and instantaneously. I want to be able to rifle through something and kind of miss the exact spot that I wanted to get to.
I miss going to a store. Do you know what I mean?
Yep.
I miss going to a video cassette store.
I miss going to a video cassette store and trying to ascertain through some sort of mental astrology which movies have the highest masturbation factor based on the box and the cast.
Exactly. That's the thing. It's like, you know, everyone's so happy about downloading or whatever.
Boring.
What about the days of going to a store and having to interact with a socially marginal person who hated you so that you could find out the thing you wanted wasn't there, and then you were forced to watch something you didn't like?
I know. That's
how you discovered all those terrible movies, right?
That's right. That's right. That's how I saw Night of the Comet.
Night of the Comet, an apocalyptic movie.
An apocalyptic film starring Catherine Mary Stewart.
Because all teenagers dream that all adults will die and leave them everything.
Yes.
To their own, leave them entire cities to their own pleasure. That is why Barack Obama was elected president.
Wow, you just took that a whole extra step.
Because young people today just want to take from the people who made stuff before.
That's right. And I think that's the basic message of Night of the Comet, which I think was directed by Nostradamus.
Yes.
But Night of the Comet was basically crappy 80s Omega Man. Not that Omega Man was such a phenomenal movie, but it had its value, I think.
Oh, well, you know, Omega Man is a strange film.
Yeah, yes.
Do you know what I mean? Because in the original Richard Matheson story, it is something happens that turns the entire population into vampires.
Right.
And I'm talking about actual, you know, Nosferatus.
Right.
Bloodsuckers.
Mm-hmm.
With bald heads.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Never going to sell.
Max Shrek types. But Omega Man flipped it. And they said, it's not that they turn into vampires. The disease turns everyone into pale dudes in white makeup.
Right.
That are a new age cult.
Right.
They have full possession of their faculties.
They're fine.
I don't think that they want to. The main thing is that they're all wearing makeup now.
There wasn't much of a downside, really, to the apocalypse in that case.
Yeah, it was just everyone had to wear black. And
everyone
was
got to be a little guy. Everyone
makeup.
Got to be the cure.
Yeah, exactly. It turned the entire population of the earth into goths. And I remember watching it finally, because I had only seen bits and pieces of it and read about it. And finally, I watched it. I'm like, I don't get what everyone is so upset about. What are they going to do to this guy? Make him, you know, like spray him down with white makeup?
I guess he just, well, you
put
can't.
Put some mayonnaise on his face?
Don't put white makeup on Charlton Heston.
Yeah, no, that's right.
Yeah, no makeup goes on this face. My makeup kit is cigarette ash.
And then they made I Am Legend with Will Smith.
Yes.
And again, it's not vampires.
No.
They're not bloodsuckers.
They're sort
of. They're just
of
crazy maniacs.
Crazy maniacs. Kind of. Mutant-y, some zombie.
Semi-zombies.
Can't go in the sun, though, so there's
right,
kind of,
no,
they're sort
that,
of vampire
yeah, yeah,
zombies.
There was that, they're vampire.
They're sort of vampire zombies.
You know why they couldn't use vampires?
Why?
Vampires aren't popular.
No one will pay to
no,
see.
No, how could you possibly sell a movie in which the entire Earth has turned into blood-sucking Nosferatu.
I don't believe it. It's just, it's not.
That's not what kids want, obviously.
No one's going to make it. What was the, I'm just having a total brain fart. The Connery movie from the 70s.
Zardoz?
Zardoz, yes.
I'm going to tell you something right now, Chris Hardwick.
Please, let's talk about Zardoz for a minute.
I worked in a video store, which meant my whole job was watching terrible movies.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was a young person and mm-hmm. thought that I was immortal and sure. therefore could waste all the time I wanted in my life.
Time was meaningless.
And I was working in a store where the whole point of the job was to waste time watching terrible movies during the day because no one would ever come in during the day to rent a movie.
Except for me to figure out which movies I could throw into the spank
bank. Except for masturbators.
Yes.
Yes.
Masturbatists.
Well, there's a schism.
There's an art form.
There's a schism between the two schools.
Masturbators are dirty.
Baiters and baitists.
Masturbatists. Artistic.
Well, I would say, you know, it's just not all about the orgasm.
No.
Do you know what I mean? It's
no.
also about the form.
Mm-hmm.
It's about the date that you set up for yourself. Where do you go? It's the art of seduction. It's the art of self-seduction, basically.
It's the art of holding on to an ice-cold glass to make my hand feel like someone else's. Was that too much insight, Katie?
It was too much, and yet not surprising. An ice cold Katie. Glass. I thought, now look, I thought that the art, I thought it was supposed to sit on your hand until you lose feeling in your hand.
Well, that's what the pioneers did before they had refrigeration techniques.
That's how the Amish still do it.
That's right. That's right. You're, I mean, no. Okay.
Masturbating with a cold hand, that is proud English.
That is, oh, all right, Your Highness.
Yeah.
But how, do you, here's did, a, but how did you just, freeze that water, you
what
witch?
First of all, that was record time for a masturbation digression. Congratulations.
No, it wasn't, actually, unfortunately.
Oh, no, really? Yeah, oh, well, at least in our conversations.
Okay, good.
And very welcome. But in any case, I worked in a movie theater as a youth, and when I had no girlfriend or anything.
Okay.
So there was no one who was more primed to watch Zardoz than me, a nerd working in a movie theater with no social contacts,
right,
and all the time in the world, who was immortal and therefore could watch
it's
it.
It's Connery,
but I still have not seen it.
It's
I've never
kind
seen
of sci-fi-ish.
It.
It's there's a lot of penis talk.
Is it John
in it.
Borman who directed that movie?
That actually sounds right.
Let's say that. No. Don't pick up that
up.
Device.
Okay, I'm sorry.
This is a non-search engine conversation.
I appreciate that, and
are you prepared for it?
I am prepared for it because I feel like if there's one thing the internet's really good at, it's making strong, airtight cases with little to no information. For real,
right?
So let's just say that Borman did direct Zardoz.
Exactly. I am not going to offshore my memory today. I'm going to absolutely count on the vague memory I have.
And there will still be someone in the comment thread who's like, it was actually, and it, like not.
Yeah. What if it were John Borman? Absolutely right.
Yep.
There would have been someone in the comment thread saying we were totally wrong, and what is wrong with us?
Of course.
Because in the alternate, in Earth 2 version of this conversation,
yeah,
it was. Terrence Malick.
Let's say Terrence Malick directed right. Zardoz in that world.
I think it was John Borman who directed Zardoz, and I don't care to find out, honestly, one way or the other, because I've seen the photo. I've seen the photo of Sean Connery wearing his Frank Frazetta red thong outfit with the gun. And I was able to take that photo and put it in my book with the caption, in the future, after the apocalypse, all mustaches will be mandatory.
It's sort of like...
And that's all I needed from that
it's
movie.
Kind of like Man Barbarella. So it's like Barbarello.
Right.
Without so much of the kitsch factor to it. It was just...
Yeah.
There was that period of the 70s where they're like, fuck it, let's just try anything.
Right.
You know? And
right.
It wasn't really...
I think the problem with this shoot is that we're not all... high and fucked up enough.
You know, I was thinking that.
Because this is not the Zardoz I envisioned. Because a lot of this plot is making sense and is a pleasure to look at. So can we please get some better drugs in here?
I read the 4-page script and I am expecting way better than what is actually being committed.
Here's something that you may not know.
Mm-hmm.
The 4-page script wasn't even a script.
Oh.
It was a cut up bits and pieces of a Ralph Bakshi movie played backwards, but you could only watch it when you were sitting there listening to an Anthony Braxton album and feeling a carpet sample.
Okay, so
that was how they made movies at that time. You just had to feel it.
That's a very analog way to do everything.
Yeah.
What was the Bakshi movie? Was it Fritz or Wizards or
Coonskin?
Okay.
That's the name of that movie, right?
Sure.
Isn't it Coonskin?
I can't.
We can't look it up.
Nope. It's Coonskin then.
There is a controversial Ralph Bakshi movie that was, I don't know that's ever been released, but there are bits of it on YouTube. It has to have been released if there are bits of it on YouTube. So on video.
Or
on,
someone,
on video
someone
cassette,
had it.
That was very controversial because it was essentially a rabbit in blackface was the hero.
I wonder why that would cause a stir.
And it was called Coonskin.
You know, it's funny. I guess. Jesus
Let
Christ.
Me ask you this question really
That's
quickly.
Awful. That's a true thing.
First of all, it's me, John Hodgman. I'm here talking to Chris Hardwick, who's part of the Nerdist podcast.
Not at all.
I just rushed over through the apocalyptic rain that is besieging Los Angeles at this time. By apocalyptic, I mean it is drizzling slightly.
There are a couple
and people are murdering themselves.
There are a couple of fat drops that have fallen down. But then that's about it.
But this is what I saw on my way over. Fat drops landing on people's shoulders, like coloring their shoulders, looking at it. Then they would just walk into their apartments and open their veins because they figured this is the end of time.
So it was
cars screeching off the highway.
It was sort of like The Happening.
Yes, exactly so. People putting ice picks in their eyes.
No, I mean people killing themselves in the theater while watching The Happening.
Oh, I've never seen that movie either.
Well, you're okay then.
Well, see, the thing is that I've grown older, and unlike you, I have human children.
What?
Yeah.
How many of these?
I have two human children.
Human children?
Yeah.
Did you grow them yourself?
I had help.
Okay.
Yes. I found a surrogate womb.
Just in the produce section. I was sifting through. You can grow a baby in a cabbage, right? If you fuck a cabbage, a baby happens.
Yes.
The Cabbage Patch Kids.
Yes.
That's where Xavier Roberts fucked a cabbage.
Yes.
And it got hard when the Cabbage Patch Kids got popular because
it would have had to get hard or else it wouldn't have worked.
Yes. He had to be like, I mean, hundreds of cabbages a day to produce these children.
Yes, absolutely. And they all had to be refrigerated.
I mean, he basically would have looked like a Skeksis in a lawnmower man suit. Like, and they were just pumping fluid out of his body to fertilize these innocent cabbages.
I take that reference as revenge for my Anthony Braxton and a carpet sample. Like, you're just like, really? Now you're brushing me back, aren't you? To use a baseball metaphor, you're brushing me back.
I get out reference.
You were like,
John
no,
Hartman.
you were like, oh, really? Anthony Braxton and a carpet sample? Guess what? Here comes Skeksis in a lawnmower man suit. Wow. You know what? I back off the plate, sir.
No, there's room for two at this table. There's room
that
for
was,
two.
That was amazing.
I'm still stuck on this Ralph Bakshi movie, Coonskin, that I don't have any recollection of whatsoever.
It's obviously not Lord of the Rings. It's not Fritz the Cat.
That's funny.
There's another one. Heavy Traffic.
Pop was that Don Bluth? It's funny that Bakshi like after Fritz the Cat was like, you know what? I think I can go a little more racist.
I'm not sure which came first. But Bakshi was of that world, like our crumb,
right?
Where they were using incredibly, sort of. Now I'm not going to say racist because I don't know what was in their hearts or is in their hearts, I should say, because they have not yet died and the world has not ended. But they were using very old and offensive racial caricature,
sure,
to be provocative,
sure,
in an interesting way. To people who were stoned in the 70s, I think.
That's right.
Both R. Crumb and Bakshi.
That's
were
always
doing.
The parenthetical, though, to people who were stoned in the 70s. That's Zardoz. Yes. That's all of it. It was basically drug fueled content for drug fueled audiences. And I guess because everyone was on the same page, it worked somehow.
What a time.
what a
golden era for culture.
Greasy,
it was.
The 70s was just greasy. It just. The 70s to me just feels like, you know, when you like at the end of the day, a fry cook just scoops all the stuff off the frying surface just into
that trough.
Then that was the 70s. That's
the grease trough.
So that with pubic hair, it was the 70s.
That was the other lost Ralph Bakshi movie, Grease Trough with Pubic Hair. The Adventures of Grease Trough and Pubic Hair.
So many great pieces of work lost. I actually bought a cell from Wizards, and Ralph Bakshi signed it at a Comic-Con.
Another post-apocalyptic movie.
Yes.
Which was set in a world and after all guns had been outlawed in a certain part. There were two wizard brothers, one of whom looked like a Von Bode illustration, and the other one looked like
it was
a Skeksis and a lawnmower man.
It was Keith Wizard and Stan Wizard, and they were opened an antique shop.
Do you remember? We are of the same age.
Yes.
We are the ones who we bridged the generations.
Mm-hmm.
We started with rotary phones, and now we have head
and now we have cell phones that sound like rotary phones.
Exactly.
When they ring.
Right. And we are the connection between those things. So I saw Wizards in the theater with my dad. Because we were at that tail end of the 70s, early part of the 80s, where Star Wars had made science fiction the most important thing.
Sure.
And yet there were still the Ralph Bakshis out there who were making these weird 70s sex films in the form of cartoons.
Mm-hmm.
And so my dad took me to see Wizards, and I don't think either of us understood what happened. We drove home in silence.
I don't know if anyone... I mean, I was a huge animation nerd growing up, and so when I saw Wizards at VHS. Like, I saw it in the store, and I'm like, oh my God, that look... You know, the artwork looks amazing. And I remember...
Well, wait a minute. Maybe you are younger than I am.
Well, we're about the same age.
I'm 65 years old.
I'm 63.
Oh, okay. That's it. That's the difference. Right. Gotcha.
Yep.
Okay.
So
you saw Wizards in the... this is the beauty of going to the video store.
Yep.
And you looked at it and you're like, there is no masturbation material here.
Or is there?
Right. It was an open question.
Listen,
right.
At that age...
It's all Bakshi. Yeah.
At that age, it's all... Everything's fair game.
It's moving image.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's right.
Moving images in a glass of ice water and you're good.
Well, just a moving image that's stable. I mean, so much of it was also trying to decipher scrambled porn. Is that a vagina or a shoulder pit? I don't know. but it's my mind can take me to whatever that place I need to be is, so that's fine.
I think there's a whole generation of dudes who are now erotically trained to be aroused by television
static
snow and static
and white noise.
Yeah, exactly. of trying to unscramble or trying to see through the scrambling of the cable channels.
That's right.
Adult entertainment.
Oh yeah, fuck it. This is...
Did you ever see A Boy and His Dog?
No.
Well, you know, don't say it in that way.
Okay.
I'm here to say we don't all have to see Zardoz. Do you know what I mean?
Well, I'm here to say we are, Mr. President.
No, but it's like, you know, we live in a milieu of nerd snobbery.
Yes.
Where we you know, because we cannot compete on field of sports.
Yes.
Our game is a kind of incredibly white dozens of making more and more esoteric references.
It's information.
You saw the one upsmanship.
It's information highlight.
Yeah, and it's not even one upsmanship because it's a total lateral move. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not getting over on you at all. I'm just moving over to the side, even more to the margins of society by referencing Zardoz.
You know what's interesting though, and you do bring up kind of interesting. I've been really stuck on this idea lately of nerd on nerd violence within the community. People have started to take it upon themselves to start pointing out who shouldn't or should not be allowed to be in the community or say, you know, it's like people are trying to call people out. And, you know, I get it. It's trendy right now. I mean, like it's popular right now. Like the nerd culture.
It was
thing is,
until 2 weeks ago.
It was. Oh, shit. Good.
Yeah, sorry.
But, you know, I get just as frustrated with people who like someone. I emailed someone. We were going back and forth, and she said, "Oh yeah, my friend used to love Doctor Who until it got popular, and now he doesn't even want to watch it anymore." Because I'm like, "Well, he's just an anti-trend chaser. That's just as bad as chasing a trend."
That is what I would call hipsterism.
Yes,
which is to say, gaining cachet through gaining cachet and social credibility.
Right.
Through your taste.
You should like stuff because you like it, because it's good.
Precisely so.
Sometimes those things are popular and sometimes those things are not. But you should still have the conviction to stand behind the things that you love.
Well, look,
regardless.
You have outlined, in the Buddhist sense, the big vehicle definition, the Mahayana definition of nerdism.
I don't know if
which
I
is to say that it's not tied to a specific piece of culture or a specific pursuit. But that it is an expression of enthusiasm for a thing.
Sure.
That nerdism is an expression of enthusiasm for the thing that you love.
Right.
And I appreciate that definition. I think that is a positive definition. Of course, it is so broad as to be meaningless, but I do appreciate it. I appreciate it more, but I think you're dead on in that. Whatever nerdism is, it is defined by enthusiasm and wanting to share that enthusiasm with other people.
Sure.
Now, there is a long tradition in the nerd culture back when it was equally defined by being socially marginal.
Yes.
Where it was not you shared that stuff not purely out of enthusiasm, but to create, to find solace in a community of people who had also heard of the weird thing you had heard of.
And when I grew up, that was literally like four other people. I mean, like, it was such a small, it was such a small group.
Right.
And I think the thing that really irritates me about it now is that, you know, I feel like if any group should be accepting and not try to be exclusive,
sure,
it should be our group, and, like, you know, give people a chance. You know, if they've just been turned on to something and they're excited about it, let them be. If they're you know, if they're sort of fair weather nerds, then fine, they will not stay around.
But can I explain to you why that is, why that happens?
Why?
Have you ever been bullied or teased?
For the first, up until, it happened up until like freshman, sophomore year of high school, and then we moved away.
Right.
And I got to start over, and it happened less because I didn't have long enough in a high school. I went to two different high schools in two different cities. I didn't have long enough to bury any roots, right, and I kept very quiet my last year of high school because I just didn't want to go through it all again.
You could have just said yes, but that's fine. I'm glad to have that story. I feel bad now, and I'm gonna give you a hug in a minute. But
okay, good.
It feels terrible, right?
It's awful.
Have you ever bullied someone?
I'm sure I have. Absolutely.
No, you would know if you had, because that feels fucking awesome.
Okay.
And you talk about nerd-on-nerd violence.
Okay, I've been on the wrong side of this.
I discovered this.
That feels awesome.
And I'm not saying that as an endorsement. I'm saying it is an incredibly powerful feeling that you do not forget once you have it, and it is immediately addictive. And I know this because when I started working at The Daily Show,
mm-hmm,
where I am still on television from time to time,
yes,
there is a wonderful young man there named, what is that nerd's name? Elliot Kalin.
Okay.
Incredibly funny writer. Incredibly lovely guy. And a small, bespectacled little nerd who keeps, you know, action figures on his desk.
Mm-hmm.
And as a comedy joke routine, one day, I walked by his desk and I saw his promotional Iron Man mask that he had there. I'm like, what's this, nerd? That's my Iron Man mask, he said, playing along. He said, yeah, that's really good. Nice work, nerd. This is mine now. And I took it and I walked away. And I knocked over some shit on his desk. And he was like, but you're such a bully. And I was like, yes, it's a joke, but it's true. And I feel good.
That's okay.
And then I it got out of hand. Like, I kept doing that to him. I would go up to him and I would be mean to him and I would call him nerd.
Yep.
And then, I would take things from his desk. He would be walking down the hall. This is when it changed, I realized.
Uh-oh. Did it get serious? Did it get for serious?
It got a little serious because I had just changed from my street clothes into my dress clothes, and I was carrying my sneakers down the hall, and he was walking down the hall, and I said, hey, nerd, hold my shoes, and I threw my sneakers at him.
Uh-oh.
And I think it took us both by surprise how real it was.
Mm-hmm.
And what took him by surprise, I suppose, was that it kind of hurt physically and emotionally.
Sure.
But we all know that.
But you...
What took me by surprise was how great it felt to throw my shoes at a nerd. It felt...
Shit.
Because I was playing on a power differential that was real. Do you know what I mean?
Like, if you can be seduced by it...
Yeah, no, no, no.
No one is
like,
safe.
I was on camera talent. He's a writer. Yeah, yeah, we're all friends. We're all friends. But I could treat you like garbage at will, and I'm going to throw my shoes at you, and that's going to feel awesome.
And then how did you pick up the pieces of your...
I don't care what that nerd thinks.
Oh, well, that works out.
He and I are friends. But the most recent iteration of it is that every time he brings his wife to an event, I seduce her.
Oh, okay.
I pretend to seduce her. And I am someone who in a dancing type environment, I will sit on the side, you know, tensely. I will never dance.
Yep.
Do you know what I mean? I never, you know, I'm a happily married person, but even when I wasn't, I'm totally terrified around women, would never flirt or whatever. But when Elliot brings his wife around, suddenly I'm fucking Daniel Craig. Well, he doesn't dance, right?
Let's say Don Johnson.
Yeah, that's much better. Don Johnson, because you're bringing it back around to a boy and his dog.
Hey!
Podcasting professional.
Bam!
No, but I was totally, like, whenever he brings his wife around, there's something is unleashed in me, and I'm like, hello, my darling. Would you like to come dance? And we will, you know, and he will get so upset, and it unleashed a a jockish side in me that I did not know existed.
So you found an even weaker class to, you know, it's I remember reading about an experiment.
By the way, Elliot, I've said this to Elliot's face many a time.
Sure.
It is a joke that got out of hand. Now we are pals. I collaborate with him all the time. He's absolutely brilliant. He appears on my audiobook for That Is All as Dr. Elliot Kalin, prominent Ragnarok denier.
Mm-hmm.
I love him. I adore him. And I really love his wife. And and we are pals.
So you think that all makes up for it?
What's that?
That all makes up for it.
Well, I figure I'm on the Nerdist podcast. If I do a shout out to this nerd on this podcast, he's going to be so busy.
Hodgman, when did you become a jock? I'm so surprised. You know, you've lived in New York for a couple years. You've got hardened up.
Well, no, all I'm saying is that it makes small people, including the smallest of people, nerds,
sure,
feel bigger to shit on other people.
I guess that's true. It is a transference of. I remember reading about these experiments where they would. The scientists would basically antagonize a rat, poke it a bunch,
yeah,
and then that rat would transfer that aggression over to a weaker rat.
Is this a science experiment that you ran in your bathtub with a couple of rats?
Well, I mean, listen, are hamsters rats? I don't know.
It's like, you know, it is unnerving to see what you would call, I guess, the nerd community get stratified and jockified.
Yeah, it's too bad.
It's weird. But what I would say is that those people, and you know, that there is something else out there, which is hipsterism.
Yes.
And that's often defined and loathed and everything else. But the way I would define it would be, you know, if nerdism is about enthusiasm for a subject or a piece of popular culture or whatever, hipsterism is sort of a hoarding of esoteric popular cultural references in order to bully people with
it's an
them.
Aesthetic. It's an aesthetic. It's like a crab grabbing another crab's shell to gain some sort of popularity. I think
that metaphor is pretty hack, by the way. That's
it's like a crab. Well, like let me finish.
I like that metaphor back in 2009.
Let
do you
me
know
finish.
What I mean? But now we're on to better things.
The crab is actually burrowing into the Shell Oil Company, and
getting better.
And he's upsetting the global balance of finance distribution.
I like that very much. Okay, I was trying to be hipstery
about,
like a hipster snob about your.
You were being a meta hipster, but
you know that sort of thing of like lording your taste over someone instead of sharing your taste.
Patton, I think Patton said that hipsters are nerds without the smarts, like something along those lines.
I think that they're jocks. I mean, I think that hipsters are jocks pretending to be nerds. In the sense that they're putting on a uniform,
yeah,
of cultural obsession, which is one of the things that broadly defines nerds,
and that's bringing it back.
But it's a uniform, just like a football helmet or a fringed cape of a baseballist,
and or a footballer,
yeah.
But that takes it back around to what all started this, which is
Don Johnson,
and socks.
I interrupted your
it was the idea that. People can't like something once it's popular,
popular,
and you go, well, yeah, but then the value of something isn't its popularity. The value of something is do you have enough of your own opinion and soul to like it?
Yeah,
and then stand behind that. And sometimes, you know, you'll pick something that's on the popular side, and other times, do you have the strength of character to like something that's not popular and not give a shit?
But this
what
is
people
the thing:
think.
Nerds would create subcultures around. A film or a comic or an idea or a character or a computer or whatever it is,
mm-hmm.
They would create those communities for solace. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
Whereas for hipsterism, you know, and I don't want to break it all down this way, but then there's another way to approach pop culture, which is much more common to the music culture traditionally, like cool kids liking music.
Yep.
Where it's not that you're forming a group around that piece of culture. For solace, it's aspirational. It's to get into a cool group.
I guess that's true, yeah.
And to ally yourself with a cool that you don't have yourself.
That's right.
That you will abandon the moment that it's no longer cool, because the whole point of doing it is because you want to be cool.
And you don't want to associate yourself with people like the masses.
Right. Because
you don't want to go, well, I'm not a dumb sheep. Right. I liked this thing before, right. But it's like...
I'm aspiring to the next cool.
But you know what's funny about that is that, like, the thing didn't change. The thing, it was neutral the entire time.
Yeah.
The piece of content, the song, the television show, whatever it was, that was neutral the entire time. The only value was placed on it externally by the sway of popular or opinion.
Right. Zardoz has been the same movie.
The entire time.
Since it was first film in 1892.
It's that. That's right. And it was shot on brass. Just shot on brass.
And discovered by Joseph Smith. But you are right that there is a different moment in time now where the things that we grew up loving that were unknown or marginal, and we took solace in the small groups that formed around them because we otherwise had no friends. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? That those things are cool. That there's, you know, there is cool associated with Doctor Who, and that's unnerving. Do you know what I mean? Now, I won't say it's a ton of cool. Do you know what I mean? Sports is still king, right?
Right.
Sports is still...
It's still king in this country.
Yeah.
There's no question.
In the world, sports is still king.
More people watch the Super Bowl than the season finale of Doctor Who, yes.
Yes, exactly so. But there is a certain... And whether it is lasting or whether it is of this moment, there is a certain mainstreaming of what have been traditionally... nerdy or geeky pursuits,
yeah.
Genre, movies, television, comics,
yep. Sci-fi
books,
yep.
Sci-fi, fantasy, and then computers, obviously. And it all happened because of computers. It all happened because of the internet. You know, it became the worldwide convention for nerds.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? It was a self-selected population of white people who liked science fiction and fantasy who were using those computers early on, and whereas they would previously have gone into a Sheraton to meet each other once a year, now they could talk to nerds all over the world and form essentially a massive cultural voting bloc.
They can go on
full of
news groups.
Economic power. No. But I mean, you know, the reason that there are so many comic book movies now that are made this way is because, you know, it goes back to Ain't It Cool? Like, you know, Harry Knowles, you know, went from being a fanboy to someone who was influencing the industry that he was talking about.
Which really
was... For good or for ill, but that was... He marshaled an army of invested fans.
Yeah.
And made that kind of nerdy appreciation of movies an economic block.
Well, because now everyone has a voice. Everyone has a way to express... Right. And I mean, it's essentially you're creating armies. If you can raise an army digitally or IRL,
right?
But he basically, it was basically just raising an army and giving people
nerds had never
strength in numbers.
Yeah, nerds had never been able to raise armies before.
No. But now, it's, you know, it is interesting to see the shift from, I think a marketing douchebag would call it a bottom-up versus a top-down. That is a bottom-up because it's not a handful of companies. It's not the ruling class telling you what you can enjoy.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought this was another masturbation euphemism.
Oh, well, now that you mention that, I'll be right back. Sit on my hand.
And we're back. We just took a three-hour break, and
yep.
Chris just came back now. And
three whole hours.
Yes. He's covered with cabbage leaves. And
It's a chi masturbation.
You know, I think what's interesting is that, yeah, and Patton has written about this, too.
Yeah, he did.
That these things, science fiction and fantasy, are much more mainstream now. I mean, you remember before Lord of the Rings came out, there was a lot of sniffy, like, who's going to go see a movie about hobbits?
Right.
You know, because even people who were writing movie coverage were jocks compared to the D&D players in their high school. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
And you know, obviously, the success of Lord of the Rings... made everyone, if they admitted it or not, eat a lot of crow.
Well, it was you know, it was Lord of the Rings, it was Spider-Man, it was X-Men, it was Harry Potter, it was all these things sort of, and with the confluence of broadband and you know, these armies kind of raising and being able to, and they were the ones that had, you know, internet connections first, they were the ones that got broadband first, they were the ones that were building the message boards, they were the ones that were populating the message boards, and... But you know, I don't think it's a bad thing. I mean, you know, we get a Joss Whedon directed Avengers movie, which I really enjoyed. Superhero movies in the 80s were way more missed than they were hit.
Oh yeah, no, I'm not. Believe me, I'm not saying that it's a bad thing.
Right.
But I mean, it does change the definition of what nerdery traditionally has been, because
sure.
there was a big part of it that it was obsessive, enthusiastic, and also socially marginal. And that last part of the nerd stool, of the three legs of the nerd stool,
yes.
has changed. And you know, I don't see that there's a problem with that, but
no,
I'm not surprised that for that reason the community, as you say, it gets a little fractious.
Well, I just feel like that by definition,
because now nerds can get over on each other.
They can, but by definition, there I still feel like it's safe. It's not the pool may be more full than it was before, but I still feel like that the people who truly have that gene will dive deeper down the chasms than other people will. So there will always be a refuge.
Well, at the end of the day, yes, exactly. So you like what you like, mm-hmm. and that applies to movies and TV shows, and that applies to people in the world. You know what I mean? Like, you don't have to. You're not a hipster. You don't have to associate with stuff that just because you're supposed to.
I guess that's true. So if you, for instance, you know, if I say I like Doctor Who, and then Chris Angel goes, I love Doctor Who, my instant reaction is like, oh, great, another Doctor Who fan. I'm like, you can't like what I like.
Did Chris Angel say he loves Doctor Who?
No. But he might. Yeah. I don't know him.
What would you say if you learned that Chris Angel was the next Doctor?
I would say something had gone terribly wrong, and that the mutants from Omega Man had somehow taken over the BBC and just started trying to run it into the ground.
But, you know, it's also important not to overstate the moment that nerdism has been experiencing.
Let's not underestimate the involuntary, like, that probably escaped a lot of mouths when you said, what if Chris Angel were the next? Like, even the men, you said it, and if you say a thing in life, that gives it a reality.
Yes, and there was a time probably in culture when that could happen.
The angel has the phone box, come on!
Whoa.
That's
nice.
Huh?
I like that a lot.
Thank you.
Good reference.
Thank you.
Not as good as Skeksis in a Lawnmower Man.
No, but it was...
Well, the point is...
A homophone.
You like what you like. You're not a hipster. You don't have to like Zardoz. You don't have to see a boy in his
You don't
dog.
Have you to don't like have anything. To anything. You can like exactly. what you want. And that's why I always say...
But you have to see a boy in his dog.
But can we just break it down for a second?
Because I never saw it, and I worked at that video store, and I looked at that thing all the time, and I was like, I don't want to see this Don Johnson movie. But it is a weird and terrifying and interesting apocalypse movie.
Really? Okay.
That has a psychic dog in it, played by Tiger from the Brady Bunch.
Really? I'm glad he got other work.
That was his only other job.
Oh.
Yeah. Then, I mean, literally, that was his only other job. I think he got sick and died.
Oh, yeah.
That.
I saw his E! True Hollywood Story. Yeah. There's a lot of drug kibble.
And there's an underground post-apocalyptic community that is led by Jason Robards wearing white pancake makeup.
Sure.
Like the Omega Man.
It's always the white pancake makeup.
And as weird and as greasy and as drug-infused, and I'll be blunt, I mean, it's purposefully misogynist,
mm-hmm.
because that's what the story is about to some degree.
Okay.
It is, and sort of ramshackle as the movie is, it's still a good movie.
All right, I'll check it out.
That's all I'm saying about
Very
that.
Very easy, by the way. If a dog wanted to become a heroin addict,
yes,
they already have the collar. You pull that off, tie that around just above the elbow joint.
Right.
The problem is the no opposable thumb, so how do you plunge the syringe down? I guess you just have to...
Well, that's why the dog needed Don Johnson in the movie A Boy and His Dog.
To shoot the... Because before that, he just has his other adorable dog buddies like mashing their noses into the plunger.
Exactly.
And it's... I mean, I don't know if you can describe heroin use as adorable, but I guess in this instance, it would be pretty adorable.
I think you are unfortunately and unconsciously giving rise to the worst YouTube meme of all time.
Heroin dogs,
adorable heroin
pups.
Bunnies,
heroin puppies. You know what?
I thought it was funny when I put a pancake on this rabbit's head. What if I get it high?
These are the pound puppies you never heard
about.
There
have got to be 10 million videos of dudes getting their, like, college dudes getting their dogs high, right?
Oh, God, I hope. Yes, I'm sure there are.
There's got to be.
Well, getting their dogs high by blowing pot in his face, not getting their dog high by strapping it to a chair, tying its arm off, and injecting it with a heroin.
No, of course there's a difference. That's why we decriminalize dog marijuana and not dog heroin.
Hey. What? How come your dog's pulled all of his eyelashes out?
The message.
He's chewed all of his own.
The message that I give to nerds who are saying that some nerds aren't nerds and whatever. It's like, stop being bullies, nerds. Stop being jocks.
Yeah, seriously.
You are this culture, such as it is, you know, it is enjoying a moment of surprising mainstreaming. But what no armies we can raise will be greater than the army that can be raised by 2.5 men. Do you know what I mean? No army that we
which
no
iteration
army that we raise. That's a good point. But there's someone's very angry upstairs.
Oh yeah, I don't know. Ever since Bruce Banner moved in, he just shouts at the TV and then and then he just gets mad.
No, you know, it's like the forces of non-nerdism are still strong.
Yeah, they are, and I think people. I mean, you know, do you think you always want to be the other thing? Like, if you're one, it's sort of like, you know, I always say, I think all comedians want to be rock stars, and all rock stars want to be comedians.
Yes. That's why there is the best show on WFMU.
Tom Sharpling.
Yes. Just look it up, nerds.
Yeah, they already know what it is.
You have access to Google. We do not.
I feel bad about the Tom Sharpling show. You know, he had me on once. I didn't realize we were live. I thought we were doing a podcast, and I accidentally said, fuck.
Right.
And he instantly hung up on me, and we've never spoken again.
Oh, well, you know, I think the bigger insult was not that you said fuck, but that you thought you were doing a podcast, because he takes intense pride in the fact that he does a live terrestrial radio show.
Well,
a lot of it is bluster, you understand. A lot of it is the part of the act.
Oh, I know, I know. And I knew, I mean, of course I know that he does a terrestrial radio show.
Right.
For some reason, it was expressed to me that I thought this was for the podcast version and not for the terrestrial radio version.
Asking me to broker a truce.
I just need you to find a neutral location. Let's say Stockholm.
Yeah.
And
let's go to the Kittimer Accords.
We'll go and we'll finally hammer this out.
Yeah.
This 4 or 5 year old issue.
Beef. Nerd beef.
That's happened.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I'll broker a truce. What I'm saying is I am certain that there are no hard feelings.
Let's talk about your book for a second.
Oh, right. Which second do you want to talk about it?
Wait, I think we just missed it. Now.
Okay.
Well, that's all the time we have.
So the reason I was watching A Boy and His Dog, and the reason I was watching Omega Man, I mean, there were a lot of post-apocalyptic things that I had already seen, including wizards, obviously.
Yes.
And like all humans, I am fascinated with post-apocalyptic fictions because I believe that I am immortal, and if something terrible were to happen to the rest of the Earth, I was going to be the one who's going to survive it.
Yep.
Like all people who enjoy zombie movies, I also wish to shoot my neighbors in the head with impunity.
You would be like the protagonist from Childhood's End.
Yes,
who
exactly
just
so.
Gets to witness everything, and then it's all over, but he's still...
Exactly so. I am the mustachioed Uatu the Watcher. But there were a lot of blind spots in my education that I had to watch and get to know, because I was writing this book, That Is All.
Yes.
Which is my last book of fake trivia.
Right.
Which deals with all of the things that I was too terrified to deal with before, which is wine and sports.
Sure.
And death and the end of the world.
Okay.
And as you know, the date today is November something.
15th.
It doesn't matter when it is.
Sure.
This is a podcast. It lives forever.
It's November the 37th.
Right, exactly so. And on December 21st, according to the ancient Mayans, the world is going to end.
Okay.
Now, do we know that for sure? It's hard to say. The ancient Mayans lived a long time ago.
They said a lot of things.
They you know, they're pretty smart, but they still didn't know how to make smooth pyramids. So how smart could they be?
But you know? Maybe it's like creamy and chunky peanut butter. They just like lumpy pyramids. They like lumpy lopsided
smooth
pyramids.
Smooth them out, Mayans.
Come on, guys.
Come on. You looked at a step pyramid. You know what I mean?
It's shameful.
There's a reason that they're called the Great Pyramids of Egypt.
Yes.
Because they're great. They're,
listen, Egyptians were pyramid nerds. There's no question.
That's true. That's true.
And the Mayans?
The Mayans, you know.
Like, it's good enough.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, you know, it's shit looks like Lego.
Yeah.
You know what like, I mean? Lego that looks like Lego is Lego, right? But if you make that Lego look smooth, that's a hard thing to do.
It's like trying to cover a giant hole in your wall with spackle versus joint compound.
That's exactly right.
It's just the wrong...
I say, acting as if I know any of those words.
That's about the only construction terms that I know.
Spackle or joint compound?
Yes.
Yeah, right.
The joint compound is for bigger, I think, and then spackle is just for like, oh, I put a nail and
see,
then
we all learned something.
Moving out of my apartment.
But so, yeah, I don't know whether the world is going to end on December 21st. I've predicted as much in my book.
Maybe I should hold this until the December 22nd, this podcast. We'll see.
Well, or you can hold the podcast, but then also call me on December 22nd so I can express my shame.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, good. I'll do that.
At that point, I will almost surely be on the run from all the people who gave away their earthly possessions, counting on my prediction to be true.
Well, who did they give them away to?
To the non-believers like you.
Well, then maybe we would back you up for getting all this free stuff.
Maybe what I need to do is take refuge. All right, here's what you're going to do, everybody. This is going to work great, Chris.
Okay, great.
Everyone listening to this, run this before the end of the world, okay?
Okay.
All right, good. So the end of the world is coming December 21st.
Sure.
It's going to happen just the way you always expected it to happen. Collapse of civilization, very soon thereafter, gas shortage, economic collapse. The dollar falls, the beef jerky dollar rises, zombies, the blood wave, the omega pulse, the dog storm, the return of the ancient and unspeakable gods to drown you in blood. And then that's it. So.
How long does that take, by the way?
Well, I had initially predicted a year.
So the end of the world
but
is actually...
we only have about 6 weeks left, so it's going to be pretty compressed.
Okay.
maybe my calculations were a little off, and it's all going to happen that one day.
Okay.
But the point is, you might as well, you don't need your money anymore. And you don't need your possessions.
Right.
So donate them all to, what's the name of your LLC?
Nerdist Industries?
Nerdist Industries.
Or Fish Ladder is my corporate.
Yeah, okay. Fish Ladder. How many different shell companies are you running here?
What are you talking about?
No, well, there's Nerdist Industries, and then there's Nerdist LLC, and then there's Bain Capital.
And then you're
Fish Ladder is my Fish Ladder is for my international affairs. Like all of a sudden, it's, you're like Ozymandias up in here. What are you hiding? What are you gonna unleash on the world through your
nothing,
web of corporations?
Nothing. Listen, it's all
well. Anyway,
same.
Give all your money to Chris Hardwick.
Sure.
And because why not? And then
what's
Chris,
it going to hurt?
Right. What's it going to hurt? You might as well give it all to one place because it's just easier. All right.
Exactly.
Good. Now, nerd, stop listening. Chris, when the world doesn't end and people are mad at me, that's when I take refuge in your smooth Nerdist pyramid.
That was built by the
money. That was built with
the
money
Egyptians.
That everyone's going to give you.
Yeah.
It's literally a pyramid scheme.
That's why you always have to hire an Egyptian. It's literally a pyramid scheme. Oh, God damn it.
It's still not as good as Paul F. Tompkins' pyramid scheme joke.
Which one's that?
From the Pod F. Tomcast, like maybe the first one where his version of Ice-T is talking to his version of Andrew Lloyd Webber. and Ice-T's talking about his pyramid scheme. Which was the building and selling of actual backyard pyramids.
I think your pyramid scheme may be I think that is the gem of the podcast. I think.
Oh, thank you.
I think that really beyond. I think that beats Angel Has the Phone Box. Chris Angel has the phone box.
But this is the thing. We're nerds. We're not trying to one up each other.
No,
we're
this
just
is
playing,
true.
We're playing together.
I love it so much.
Speaking
I love
which,
it
where
so
is,
much.
Where is Paul F. Tompkins? He's got, what is he, behind the couch?
Here, let me help you.
This is a podcast, right?
Yeah,
so
that's right.
Where is he?
Well, technically, I was trapped in the internet on Paul's show for a long time. And
what
then I finally got out.
What are they? They're moving school desks up there. Is something happening outside? It's because of the rain in Los Angeles. Everyone's piling school desks against
there's
the,
a triage.
Yeah.
People
setting up a triage center up there.
A palm frond fell on the sidewalk.
Right.
And
they're smashing. They're moving school desks against the door.
It's so fucking. Los Angeles is so fucking embarrassing. The East Coast, you had Hurricane Sandy and a nor'easter in relatively close proximity, and then in LA, it's like it's getting a little cloudy.
I'm getting a little chill.
What are we gonna do? I shouldn't go to work. Get the kids.
For all of my apocalypse jokes, you know, the Sandy / nor'easter 1-2 punch really made it not so funny anymore.
It must be kind of hard to push the idea of an apocalypse book in a city that got smacked in the face a couple times.
Well, you know, it's and you know, look, obviously had been smacked in the face in a lot of different ways a number of times where something happened that you thought, how could anyone possibly recover from it? I mean, it was reassuring to see that, you know, all the lights could go out in lower Manhattan and it would not immediately become escape from New York. Do you know what I mean?
New York is one of those cities that just, you know, shit just keeps happening to New York and New York just keeps getting back up. I am so much in awe of the constitution of the heart of New York. It's amazing.
And well, I mean, part of it, I think, is our almost inhuman, and by that I mean cruel and monstrous ability to compartmentalize. Like, I flew back. I was performing with Jonathan Colton and John Roderick in Seattle.
Oh, wonderful.
And our Jonathan's and my flights were canceled, but we got rebooked the next day. We flew in on Halloween, no problem getting in, zipped down the Grand Central Parkway to my house in Park Slope, and was distributing organic, sustainably harvested candy to people in homemade Etsy costumes under our liberal dome of sanctimony.
And coconut waters.
Yeah, protected by our liberal dome of sanctimony as Red Hook and Staten Island drowned. And we were like, we had no idea what was going on. And then only later, of course, we learned, and I hope that it's getting better. And we've done a lot of, you know, I loved the fact that the marathoners decided not to do their dumb rushing back and forth sport and decided to help out.
Mm-hmm.
Slowly but surely, recovery is happening. But, you know, there's still 9-block-long gas lines. The ATMs were running out of money. And while everyone can deal with that calmly, if it goes on much longer, you feel like, oh, yeah, the line between civilization and savagery is pretty thin.
It is. Well, then, you know, I was watching videos of just seeing, you know, subway stops that were just submerged.
Right.
Where I don't know why it creeps. I have this weird fascination with that kind of creepy imagery.
Yeah,
because that's just nature going, fuck yourself.
Yeah, you know, that's nature saying, you know, you're just renting, right?
Yeah. I can do this whenever I want.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. He's like, nature is basically just like a volatile European landlord,
right?
Who's just like, I can do whatever I want, buddy.
And you know, subway tunnels full of water is an idea for a science fiction movie.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? Or an idea in a science fiction movie, at least.
Yes.
And so when you see that happening in real life, it is very, for everyone, obviously, it's very disturbing. And then for a nerd who imagines that stuff for fun, it's like, oh, this is not fun
at
all.
And I want to make it very clear that if we do become a water world,
yes,
simply making slits in your neck with a paring knife will not allow you to breathe underwater.
All right, let's do some lightning round stuff here without the internet.
Okay.
Who directed Waterworld?
Oh, fuck.
Right. Was it Kevin Costner?
I don't think he directed it.
I don't think he did either.
I think he was just in it.
Who was the female lead in Waterworld? I got you on this one.
Well, who was it?
Jeanne Triplehorn.
Oh, it was Jeanne Triplehorn.
Yeah.
Oh, Mike. I mean, I haven't seen Waterworld since...
Since Waterworld.
Waterworld.
Yeah.
And to be honest, I don't even think I saw it all the way through. I think it was an HBO viewing.
Yeah.
That halfway through, I just got up.
Guess what? They find land.
What?
Yeah.
Spoiler alert. John, I hadn't seen the ending yet. How could you do that?
Guess what? That guy became a mutant fish man within 3 generations.
Hey, by the way, Kevin Costner really does seem to enjoy the post-apocalyptic film. There was The Postman.
Yeah. Did you see that movie?
Which, no.
The Postman?
No.
The Postman?
I did not.
Guess who directed it?
Kevin Costner.
Yes.
Yes.
Absolutely right. And who was the...
No dances without wolves. There was no... There was no...
The Postman is a really weird movie. And again, I, you know, you like what you like and time is short. You do not have human children and clearly boundless energy, and you never sleep. So you might actually have some time to check out The Postman just as a curiosity.
I think I might.
But Will Patton plays the villain in that movie, and he is great.
Okay.
He plays the fascist general in that movie. And what is great about that movie, which is directly from the book, which was written by David Brin, is that the fascist general who is the villain of the book, who once society disappears, decides immediately to form a new fascist society,
yep,
had previously been a photocopy repairman. And oh. I was like, that feels right to me.
That would happen.
Yeah.
That's exactly what would happen.
Yep. That feels right to me. That is why when civilization disappears, I will die. You know, for all of the bullying of Elliot Kalin I may do, I will die wedged to death by strong fascists gasping for breath out of reach of my asthma inhaler.
That fascist may be Elliot, who in the apocalypse,
it may be,
just decides to not take the shit anymore.
Now I kind of want apocalypse to happen just to see if that will happen.
Make friends with nerds, because they will destroy you in an apocalypse.
You are all now under the Kalin protectorate.
I was about to make a joke about Elliot-ness, and I'm like, well, that's just Elliot-ness.
Yes. Oh, right. Yeah, that's true.
So that's not really
Elliot-ness. Elliot-ness would be the sort of metaphysical spiritual state that you have to aspire to under the Kalin protectorate.
Lightning round. Does The Untouchables hold up? I haven't seen it in a few years.
Lightning round. I don't know. Neither have I. That's a Kevin Costner.
He is in that movie too. Yes.
Yeah, I'm glad. I like Kevin Costner.
I think Kevin Costner is an okay guy.
Kevin Costner is great.
He was in Night Shift.
Was he?
This is a little known fact. If you watch the movie Night Shift,
yeah,
there's a scene where Henry Winkler comes back to the morgue, and Bill Blazejowski Michael Keaton is throwing a party in the morgue. There's a bunch of frat guys. One of them, of course, Clint Howard, I think. No, Clint Howard's in another. No, yes, Clint Howard.
Sure.
And Kevin Costner is a frat guy extra in this morgue scene, and he's listed in the credits as frat guy number one or two or something.
Don't look it up. You can't look it up.
It's Kevin Costner.
Oh, nice.
Yep.
All right. More post-apocalyptic no Google lightning round.
Mm-hmm. The Book of Eli was a Bible.
Oh yeah, did you see that movie?
No, it looked horrible. and then once that got out, I was like, what?
Who directed that movie?
Jesus Christ.
But what?
Oh no, I'm sorry, Jesus H. Christ, because Jesus Christ already was registered at SAG, so he had to be Jesus H. Christ. Actor joke.
What's your favorite post-apocalyptic movie?
Ooh, I mean, Road Warrior is pretty fucking great.
Right.
What are some other good ones?
Are you a Beyond Thunderdome hater?
I'm not a hater because, let me put it this way. I've not seen Beyond Thunderdome since I was very young.
Right.
And when I was a kid, you know, I thought Beyond Thunderdome was... I really liked it.
Right.
Because, you know,
it was beyond Thunderdome.
It was way beyond Thunderdome.
Now you're like, you know what? It was just merely Thunderdome.
It was Bed Bath & Beyond Thunderdome.
It caught up to Thunderdome.
It was Thunderdome, but with a lot of impulse buy refrigerator magnets.
Right.
So it, you know, I think as a kid, I noticed that, you know, obviously Road Warrior was a very, very gritty looking movie.
Yes.
And I think the shininess of Beyond Thunderdome being a much bigger budget film when I was a kid was like, oh, like, and when I was a little kid, I loved, you know, Return of the Jedi, I thought was, and, you know, like the Star Wars movie because I was like 10 years old or something when it came out. And then when I got older, I was like, oh, no, I really love Empire. Like, that's my favorite one because that's the really dark, grittier one. And I think now I would probably go back to Road Warrior over Beyond Thunderdome, because I haven't seen it since We Don't Need Another Hero was in the top 10.
It's a good song.
It's not a bad song.
You know what? I would let Tina Turner be the Elliot Kalin dictator of my barter town.
Wouldn't you?
A lot of euphemisms in there.
There is, but they actually all made sense to me.
Did you ever see Mad Max?
Of course.
Yeah, because there was still law in Mad Max. He was a cop. Society was collapsing at that time.
Remember when the world liked Mel Gibson? Remember when he was like sexiest man alive, the guy who would practical joke on the set of Lethal Weapon? He's hilarious. You know, this now he's became an anti-Semitic prankster.
It's hard.
It is interesting to see that. It's interesting to see that shift. And I think what happens is, you know, people get really successful. They get really famous. They get kind of isolated. They're with their own thoughts too much. They're not in, you know, like they don't have the checks and balances around them that go, oh, maybe I shouldn't think that, or maybe that is wrong, or maybe I,
right,
you know, and so they just lose any kind of barometer. I think it's, you know, I think in the airline industry, I think you would call that they are flying VFR as opposed to IFR.
Are you doing a buzz marketing for the new Denzel Washington movie Flight?
I may not have. That's right. Robert Zemeckis is here. I may not have gotten those abbreviations right, but basically,
I don't know what any of that.
It's
means.
The difference between flying with instruments and flying visually.
Oh,
and visually,
yeah.
You have to have all your references, reference points.
Right.
And I think
you have to be able to navigate the world.
You have to be able to navigate the world. And so I think when
on your own,
super famous people, they start flying without instruments because right. there's nothing keeping them
right.
aligned.
Right.
And then
they have a heads up display of privilege.
Yes. And all of a sudden about 20 years go by and they have 20 years of just going down that path. And then it's hard for them to understand why they can't just be themselves. Like,
right.
Well, you've become weird because you live in a bizarre cave palace above, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't, you know, it's, there is a weird thing in if you like movies and you like popular culture to, you know, when you love a performer, you love that person. Mm-hmm. You want to think they are the greatest person in the world. But who knows if Mel Gibson changed? Maybe just some bad things got emphasized the less work he had to do and the less he had to interact with other human beings.
Sure.
But it is weird to reconcile the Mel Gibson who exists today with the Mel Gibson that you kind of enjoyed.
Because I remember at the, there was a, it was an MTV Movie Awards like in 96 or 7 or something, but
sure.
Janine Garofalo was interviewing him backstage, was interviewing Mel Gibson. Of course, he had this whole, I don't know why, I'm sorry I took us down Mel Gibson vania, but he...
Mel Gibson vania is a gated community that I'm forming. We're just going to start showing the model unit soon.
Mel Shrek.
Yeah. It's a highly Catholic community.
Very, very Catholic.
Very old school pre-Vatican II community.
Yep, there's a Pope tunnel.
Yeah, exactly.
All the way to the Vatican where the Pope can just...
Where people who the people who voted for Mitt Romney and now want to leave America can go and live in Mel Gibson vania.
Yeah. And so, you know, he had this reputation of like he's a jokester and he's really
yes.
funny. And so Janine was interviewing him and she would go, now Mel, in your personal opinion, what is your favorite movie that I've ever been in? And as like she jokingly made it about herself.
Right.
And he got mad and left.
Yeah.
And so I always thought, oh, that was okay, yeah, maybe he was tired or what. And then of course, you know, as the years went by, like, yeah, I think he might just be kind of cranky.
What's going on? What is his relationship with Jodie Foster?
I don't know. She fully supported him.
Yeah. She would not back off Mel Gibson because I guess she had such great memories of making Maverick. But I remember when they were making Maverick, they got along gangbusters. Like you really, you would see interviews with them and they would just be laughing and talking about the funny jokes they had on Maverick. Do you know what I mean?
I know.
And I'm glad someone had a good time with that movie. But then you know,
even if it was just them,
it's just that they were the ones who had fun.
Yep.
But and then Mel Gibson went down the crazy hole.
Yeah.
And not only did she stand by him, but then she was like, I'm gonna bring him back for my movie called The Beaver.
Yep.
And that's gonna be his comeback. Jodie Foster didn't have to do that.
The Beaver trailer was like the Tiptoes trailer, where you're watching it and going, is this a Funny or Die sketch?
Yeah.
Or is this a thing? Is this a real? I can't figure out.
That Tiptoes. Have you seen Tiptoes?
I've not seen the movie.
No.
But
the trailer is as far as you need to go.
The trailer is hilarious for Tiptoes. If you don't know, it's Gary Oldman plays a little person.
Yes.
And it's got Matthew McConaughey and Kate Beckinsale. And
well, the reason that Gary Oldman had to play a little person. So Matthew McConaughey is a guy who brings his fiance home, having never revealed that he is the only member of his family who is not a little person.
Yes.
And his brother is a little person played by Gary Oldman.
Yes.
And if you're wondering why Gary Oldman plays a little person, it's because there are no little people who work in entertainment.
Well, he's got
and historically there never have been.
Peter Dinklage is in the movie too, as a matter of fact.
Well, yes, and I'm sure he was thrilled.
Well, he did it. And it's, you know, you look at a movie like that and you go, okay, wait a minute. They got an amazing...
Wait a minute. Are you saying that because Peter Dinklage was in the movie, that it is therefore okay that Gary Oldman played a little person?
No, I'm just saying that at least they tried to dip into the correct casting waters a little.
No one loves Gary Oldman more than me. And you can tell that I have totally modeled my new look after Commissioner Gordon.
Of course.
I have a total cop stash... And glasses of...
There's going to be a riot in the streets. You know where to find me. I have to go away for a while.
You're only one man.
Technically two men. Well, I'm one man who has two different identities.
There's daytime Batman and there's nighttime Batman.
Speaking of apocalypse, and speaking of New York taking a lot of garbage and pulling itself back up again.
Yeah.
I have not seen the third Batman movie.
Oh, Dark Knight Rises.
Yeah, I know the name of it.
Okay.
What... So don't please, I mean, I'll see it eventually. You can, it's been enough time. You can spoil things for me. But I recently was required to watch Batman Begins again.
Yes.
And I remembered what I thought at the time. Why does Liam Neeson want to destroy Gotham City?
Well, because he feels, Ra's al Ghul feels that society is sick and needs to be punished and corrected.
Did that hold water with you? When you saw that movie?
Of course, it's a comic book movie. That's the kind of shit that happens in a comic book.
I found that to be dumb.
In a word.
I just couldn't follow that. Like, you know, like the thing that would have made that villain chilling to me would be if you could follow his chain of logic. To a degree beyond which, like the whole point is that Bruce Wayne's with that guy up to a point.
Sure.
Right? Because they both hate bad guys.
Right.
They're the only two people in the world who really do.
But Gotham is buckling from like a crime, like a bad right. guy epidemic. A bad guy demic. So he, right. which is better than a bird demic.
The League of Shadows burned London because it was bad. The League of Shadows brought down Constantinople because it was terrible.
Istanbul? What? No, wait. Constantinople.
It's nobody's business but the Turks.
Thank you for jumping on that. Even old New York.
Look, I'm not a jock, right? But I can still play T-ball. You put the ball on the thing, I'm going to hit it.
You're going to hit that.
Yeah,
you're going to
exactly.
hit that T might be Giants ball.
Yo.
That was a stretch, I'll be honest.
It's fine.
But my earlier point, no, so yes, I didn't have a problem with him wanting to raise Gotham because of the criminal element. I didn't have a problem with that.
Of course. Why?
Why didn't I have a problem with it?
Destroy the city?
Sure, why not?
What would that get?
Well, then you...
What would you gain by that?
Because it's a cancerous cell that he's trying to remove to let a new society.
But is Gotham spreading little mini Gothams everywhere?
Yes, Gotham is fucking other cities like Metropolis and giving it...
Wait a minute.
Gotham herpes. Crime herpes.
This guy has infiltrated every level of Gotham society. He knows who the bad guys are. He's a total vigilante.
Right.
Take out the bad guys.
Well,
why is he murdering the little kid who sees Batman climbing up the side of his building?
You're trying to reason with a mastermind. I don't know.
Whole point is that it's supposed to be... I mean, you know, when was that movie made? 2005?
That sounds right.
So it can't not be an Osama bin Laden metaphor. Osama bin Laden is a madman, but there was a point... There was a dark, terrible, and loathsome logic to a huge symbolic attack against a major American city. It was not specifically to rid New York City of crime. It was to take vengeance for the crimes that he felt America was perpetrating on the rest of the world.
But I think that I really think that the Ra's al Ghul logic didn't fall apart for me. Because
in the comics, Ra's al Ghul wants to... I think literally decimate the human population on Earth. That is to say, reduce it by 10.
By a factor of 10, yes.
Right.
To decimate.
Because he believes that we are destroying the Earth ecologically by population growth, which is a monstrous thing to do that has It is the logical, this is the monstrous logical conclusion of a train of thought. I don't get why this guy wants to destroy. What's he going to gain by smashing this city?
I think you need to be asking him, why did you stop going to couples therapy?
It's just really on my mind.
You need to be talking to him. Now you pretend I'm him.
I don't want to play Rasha Ghul role play anymore. This isn't fucking Dragon Con.
Rasha play. Which I never got to my other point about Tiptoes.
Okay, go on.
Which was another crime perpetrated. I don't know how you get that cast. And then if you watch the trailer, everything else about that movie looked professional, and then the trailer looked like a Hallmark movie. It was literally like not even the right kind of voiceover guy, bad graphics. It was like, in the end, it's the size of your heart that matters. It was almost like they got this great cast. Like, okay, we got this great cast. We have, Gary Oldman and Matthew McConaughey and Kate Beckinsale, Peter Dinklage. It's going to be amazing. I also got the guys who did the trailer for Mac and Me, so they're going to do the trailer. And wait, what was that last part? Yeah, it'll be fine. It'll be fine. We'll save a ton of money.
Well, I think that they probably at that point realized that the movie was crazy and no one would ever see it, but they were contractually obligated to cut a trailer for it, so they did not put a lot of work.
And I dare you to keep Gary Oldman from an acting challenge like playing a little person.
I'm not faulting Gary Oldman.
No, that was like the royal you.
Oh, okay.
Well, royal you?
Well, not really. I answered to the royal you as well.
I meant
the collective, impersonal you is what you meant.
That's what I meant.
You, everyone in the world. All right, now here's the thing.
I meant the royal you because I really only want debutantes and royals.
I will bet you 1,000 Westerosian gold dragons.
Okay.
That there is a version of that script where Ra's al Ghul.
On Tiptoes?
Yeah.
Where Ra's al Ghul.
Ra's al Ghul is in Tiptoes. No, I'm still on Batman Begins.
Okay, let's go.
Where Ra's al Ghul is specifically targeting the Wayne Corporation and is going to symbolically destroy the Wayne Corporation, and the whole city is just collateral damage because they're making weapons.
But see, that's why you need to see Dark Knight Rises.
But do I?
Yes, because...
Is it explained?
Well, some of the things you're saying...
Are you afraid of spoiling me or the world?
You. Everyone else has seen it.
I'm a middle-aged man with children. I'm going to see this movie in about 5 years. So you might as well just let it out, because I am curious.
But what does he solve by destroying just the Wayne Corporation? He doesn't have
vengeance because he is a spirit of vengeance.
But he doesn't have a beef with
don't know what his beef is. All we know is that his wife died at some point. His wife was taken from me. Do they answer that question? Do they answer that mystery?
Rutger
Hauer is using the Wayne Corporation to make terrible weapons all around. I mean, that would be a cliche, but at least one that made sense, that Ra's al Ghul, having lost the person who's closest to him due to a Wayne industry invention, turning the tables and trying to destroy the people who took his wife away from him.
They're putting flowers in our water.
What's that?
They're putting flowers in the water. Basically, the fear flower.
Right. Yeah.
I guess that's true. I guess he could, but I don't think his beef was. He doesn't. His beef isn't really with Bruce Wayne. It's because he's trying.
And how insidiously wonderful it would be to use the son of Thomas Wayne to destroy that very corporation.
But then that doesn't solve the crime problem.
No, the crime problem was never important to him. Because what he's saying is, the beginning of that movie is like, when you're tired of fighting petty thieves and you want to deal with some big crimes, come and see me. Well, you know that that's the equivalent of someone on the internet saying, the real crime is the corporations raping the earth.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? That's what I bet you, 1,000 gold dragons.
That was a good kind of new age hippie moderator voice.
Thank you very much. I went to college in the 90s. I know what it sounds like.
And Birkenstocks.
Well, we've gone far afield here, Chris.
We have, and now you've got me thinking about this. I guess it is
now,
a
look,
good point.
You live here in Los Angeles, and you're at the white hot center of this nerd community.
I guess I just suspended
and
my
I'm not
disbelief.
Saying, I'm not saying that. Well, but see, that's the thing. That was the one. I obviously suspended disbelief. I mean, those are great movies.
But you,
and I,
you know,
and I utterly
whenever I watch a comic book movie,
I totally disbelieve that a dude can jump off a building and float to Earth because his cape can turn into a rigid structure.
No, that happens.
Mm-hmm.
They can run a pulse through the material and then it hardens, and then he just rides an upcurrent.
Oh, okay. Oh, he catches a thermal
all the way down. He catches a thermal.
But that was, I'm just saying that that was the moment. And it's just because I just saw the movie again, and it really, like, it's just one of those things that eats away at me, because that was one of the moments I was like, wait, what? What? Why?
Now I got to watch it again and see if I agree with you. Because I haven't seen it. I haven't seen the first one. And I think part of Batman Begins for me was like, finally, you know, we had been through so many glossy codpiece,
yeah,
snarky, non-Dark Knight Batman, where it's like, wait, Batman's quippy now? What the fuck? You know, that I just didn't even think to question it before. But now that you say that, now I think I got to go back and watch it again.
Well, I'm glad that you know, he's going to make a little bit more money.
Just know that the energy that I'm going to spend watching Batman Begins to test this theory would have gone to watching a man and his dog.
A boy and his dog.
Well, I have the older version of the movie.
You have the sequel?
I have the NC-17 version. The NC-17 version.
A man and his dog year. a boy and his dog too. A man and his dog year.
Well, this has been an absolute... I always love...
I'm sorry to raise hard questions at the end of the podcast.
It's a good question, though. I just never... I guess I'm an idiot because I never question it. Whenever I watch a comic movie, I always go... Well, it's a comic movie. Everyone's going to be more attractive. There are going to be things that are relatively improbable, and there's going to be a villain that has some
what
sort
I
of
appreciated
a grand,
about
a grand
those,
scheme.
What I appreciated about those movies was that was their realism. And even though there was some bogus pseudoscience, they did me the dignity of suggesting why a guy who was trained as a ninja would be trying to fight while wearing a cape. The most beautiful moment in The Incredibles is where Edna Mode says, why would you wear a cape?
It was such a brilliant... That was like watching stand-up. That was like Brad Bird's stand-up.
Yeah.
For superheroes wearing capes.
And so I liked the fact that they were trying to essentially place this ridiculous, like, it's a thought experiment. How do you take the most ridiculous figure and insert him into the actual world and have it make sense? And they did, and he did, both of those guys, Goyer and the director.
Nolan.
Chris Nolan. And the brother, Little Nolan.
Nolan Ryan.
Little Nolan Ryan. They did an amazing job doing that. And the idea of basically making the second one, you know, sort of like making a comic book version of The Godfather. Like, yeah, please, more.
Yeah.
But there is that one moment where it's just like, well, I have to destroy Gotham City because it's bad. It's like, that's not realistic at all. That plan makes no sense.
You are one tough customer.
I am. I am a tough customer.
But I bet you did like Lex Luthor's plan to sink California and have all the beachfront property of Nevada.
That makes sense.
That does make sense. From a capitalist point of view,
that
makes
a lot
of sense.
It's a dumb thing, but yeah, it makes sense. It's yeah, the villain has to make sense, don't you think?
Not always, because part of what makes him a villain is that he has gone down a weird path at some point. He has diverged at some point. To become a supervillain is to sort of become a politician in the villain world. And anyone who becomes a politician is slightly broken inside.
Yes.
And they have weird views
of
how things should be and these kind of macro solutions to problems. And so I guess, I just wrote it off to like comic book villain. Of course, he wants to destroy the city.
Speaking of broken politicians, you know what makes me sort of sad?
A kitten with a bandage on its paw.
A YouTube video of a kitten being given heroin. But second, Mitt Romney makes me a little sad.
Does he?
The guy must be the least self-aware human being on earth. I don't think that there's nothing in him suggests that he has ever looked inward for a second in his life and not immediately written it off as a terrible weakness. There is ask him why he wanted to be president because he clearly had no idea himself. And he is not president. And the thing is, it would have been a historic presidency, because not only would he have been the first Mormon president.
The first white president, too, right?
The first white president, mm-hmm. And also the first president who, after his administration, could portray his own audio animatronic double in the Disney World Hall of Presidents. And there at last he would feel comfortable for the first time in his life in his own rubbery skin.
That's probably the biggest loss.
I know,
for him.
Right? Because, I mean, what is a presidential election all about except,
you know what we're going to do?
Making a sociopathic narcissist feel better about himself.
In Gibsonvania, we're going to build the Hall of Almost Presidents.
Gibsonvania.
We'll put Walter Mondale.
I don't think Gibson will allow Mondale to be in Gibsonvania.
No, okay. We'll put Dewey.
Yeah. Speaking of science fiction, and we'll just close on this.
Sure.
We're joking about Gibsonvania.
Yeah.
You know, Atlas Shrugged. Have you read Atlas Shrugged?
The Ayn Rand book?
Yeah.
Yeah, when I was in college. And
you had to have read it.
You got
to
read The Fountainhead. You got to read Atlas Shrugged.
Because you're a tyrant of industry. You're an unapologetic emperor of industry.
Tyrannical.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I first of all, you know, you talk about bullying Elliot.
Yeah.
I like to bully masses of people.
Sure.
Because it's that many times more satisfying.
Yes.
If you can knock an action figure off society's desk.
Exactly so.
So you know how much I sympathize with the tyrants.
But I'm so excited. I'm so excited now that Romney has left that people are actually going galt. Do you know what I mean? It's like, okay, you want to run yourself out of business, Papa John's, out of spite.
So we're gonna,
fine, that's
okay,
fine.
Sure,
with me.
Why? Well, fine, yeah.
Oh, really? Applebee's? You're going to make it harder for me to eat at an Applebee's because you're mad at the president? Okay.
And nope, that's
not a problem.
You know, the
like,
other thing,
what is the food court going to look like in Galt's Gulch?
Are drunk people really at 3 o'clock in the morning going to be like, I'm not going to pay 50 more cents for that pizza? 50 more cents? What the fuck?
That'll show Obama.
I'm going to go to bed hungry and drunk. Fuck you, Mr. President.
If only it gets to that point and the world doesn't end. Uh-oh.
Well,
they're barricading the doors again.
Oh, I forgot to tell you, we're in Dark City and the buildings shift every night.
Oh, boy, that's one I haven't seen in a long time.
Good movie. Also, creepy pale overlords.
Was that Christopher Nolan?
That was not Christopher Nolan.
No,
shit,
you can't look it up. Oh, wow.
Sleep
now.
No,
you can't look it up either.
Sleep now. Good movie.
Wait a minute. Who
holds up,
it?
In my opinion. Rufus Sewell, Jennifer Connelly. Did not direct it.
I know. You know all these people.
Kiefer Sutherland.
Did not direct it.
Did not direct it.
It's someone. You know who it is? It's the guy who directed The Crow. Alex Proyas.
Whoa. Oh, shit. Oh, my God. I kicked the chair. He really left. enjoy your burritos, everybody. Look who's come sheepishly crawling back in after spiking the microphone.
It's slightly raining outside.
Oh, I don't want you to get partially wet.
What a pleasure, as always.
It's good to see you,
all right,
John.
Let's do this again soon.
We will do this as many
times. Hey, can I just say this?
Yeah.
The audiobook of That Is All, featuring prominent Ragnarok denier Elliot Kalin, as well as John Hamm, Patton Oswalt, Sarah Vowell, John Roderick, John Darnielle, Cynthia Hopkins, Jonathan Colton, Wyatt Cenac, Rachel Maddow, Stephen Fry.
Chris Hardwick.
It's not in the book.
You ought to have been. And, no, wait a minute.
What?
And Chris Hardwick as the voice of George Plimpton,
yeah,
in the replicated ad of George Plimpton's video Falconry is in the audiobook.
Pitch!
And I did not pay you any money for it.
I was happy to do it.
Oh, one last thing. Just a little PS, a little postscript. Yeah. Can I say this?
Please.
So,
yeah.
All you people know that I'm a big joker, right? I'm a famous jokester.
Yep.
I'm like Mel Gibson.
Yeah. Whoa, hey, I don't know if I would.
I'm famous for my pranks.
Yes.
And my light tone on set.
Yep.
Yeah, and my love of Jodie Foster.
Yep.
My tragic love of Jodie Foster that shall never be returned.
Oh, you should. Oh, I hope you two work it out.
Oh, well, anyway. So, I'm a big jokester, and I made a joke one time on my podcast, the Judge John Hodgman podcast.
Yep.
About a product called George Plimpton Video Falconry. A product that does not exist.
Which is too bad.
But I discussed...
Sort of does now.
Well, that's the thing. So I discussed my love of this early 80s Intellivision game called George Plimpton... No, ColecoVision game, excuse me. Called George Plimpton Video Falconry, which was a George Plimpton hosted video game about falconry. And people enjoyed this joke, which was good.
And you get to steer the bird.
Right. Well, you could unlock special moves by certain combinations of up, down, left, right, beak, grab, beak, grab, beak, grab, pitch, yaw. Pitch, yaw. Thank you. Beak, grab. Beak, grab, talon, snatch, pitch, yaw. And then you would unlock a special code or something. But anyway, so the company Newgrounds, which makes video games for the internet, commissioned a television ad for this non-existent video game that looked like it was made in the early 80s. And Chris Hardwick, to my without my knowledge, but to my great delight, voiced George Plimpton as the narrator of this. At Jesse Thorne's house. And you do an amazing George Plimpton impersonation.
Thank you.
So let's hear a little right now. I mean, I need to put you on the spot. I know you need to work into it for a little while.
Hi, I'm George Plimpton. What do you guys want to go to Five Guys or what do you want to
have for
dinner?
I'm George Plimpton,
and this is Video Falconry.
That's it. I met George Plimpton. That's how he actually spoke to you. Go, I'm George Plimpton.
Now I shall
go immediately into Charlie Brown teacher language.
One time, Mr. Hodgman.
Just sort of Harvardy upper class mumbles. Yeah. Anyway, and then they made the video game itself, which you could play online.
Mm-hmm.
Go to newgrounds.com, you can play it.
Mm-hmm.
And then they made a t-shirt of the game that was given to me as a gift by them when I was in State College, Pennsylvania, doing comedy for jocks. it was a weird scene. Then, I've never been in a college campus with more incipient violence all the time in my life, and I went to Yale. There's no yell at violence, it's just bitter resentment. Then, I wore that t-shirt to a wedding. And at that wedding, it was the day didn't go to the service.
Okay, that'd be weird.
It was a destination wedding. The next morning, we're all saying goodbye to the fellow guests. Whatever, I'm wearing this T-shirt. A fellow guest, a well known and incredibly intelligent and sweet movie director, whom I will not name, looked at my T-shirt and said, "I remember that game."
That's fantastic.
He said, that's funny. That was a weird game. I can't believe that game was made. I said, you remember the YouTube video? Yeah, no. And I remember seeing that commercial when I was a kid.
Oh.
Now, I will not name this movie director, but his name is Leon Critch. He directed Toy Story 3. He is a friend. And I now know that I can, if I wished, control his mind.
Yes, by creating things that form his reality.
Exactly so. So
you're like Recall Industries. Your T-shirts give people the memories of things that they.
Are you talking about the remake?
No.
Did anyone see that movie?
I don't.
The remake of it.
I think Colin Farrell saw it. I know.
It's so sad. He's such a good actor too.
Amazing. I mean, I don't have to tell you how much we've slobbered all over In Bruges on this fucking podcast.
Oh, I was just going to go into a whole In Bruges thing, but now you've
got
it.
And I liked a lot of the stuff that he's done. I really do. I thought Fright Night was a fun remake too.
Well, there's no better way to end a podcast than petering out on some praise with Colin Farrell.
No, when I was Colin Farrell.
And I liked him in, he wasn't the worst thing about Daredevil.
I could have been.
I'm George Plimpton with Colin Farrell Podcast.
Oh, I have a really bad infestation of Colin Farrell cats behind my house. So they're just really sexy, drunk cats.
How dare you? How dare you?
You go near them and they try to, you get away, you cunt. Like, they just,
I don't live in this city. I came here for this and you're giving me Colin Farrell cats.
Take them or leave them, my friend. Please, take these Colin Farrell cats.
Alex Proyas, motherfuckers.
Bye. Damn.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.